to the U Sports Safety Update. I'm your host, Jim Mackey, a certified athletic trainer with over 50 years of experience in a variety of sports healthcare settings. The Jacksonville Sports Medicine, or JSMP, is dedicated to U Sports Safety through awareness, advocacy, and injury prevention. Chronic shoulder instability, labral tears, and managing in-season and post-season instability are challenges for both athletes and physicians. We'll learn today from a skilled orthopedic surgeon how he manages these and similar conditions of the shoulder. Joining us today is an excellent sports medicine orthopedic surgeon who has a thriving practice in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute in Jacksonville, Florida, and serves as a head team physician for our hometown Jacksonville Jaguars of the National Football League. Please welcome Dr. Kevin Kaplan. I will apologize in advance as Dr. Kaplan is joining us from his ski vacation, and so there may be a little bit of background noise as he's recording from the lobby of his hotel. So thank you. Good morning, Dr. Kaplan. So you've trained in some excellent, with some excellent mentors, and you've been in Jacksonville now for a number of years. So how has this benefited you both as a person in your practice?
Well, thanks for having me. Yes, I've learned from some of the best in sports medicine. And I think, you know, not only have I learned the importance of how to do the surgical procedures, but how to take care of our patients, our athletes, our weekend warriors, and getting them, you know, through the injury process from the time they're injured, the time they're in my office, and then getting them back to the sport that they've chosen. So learning how to take a patient through that journey is something that I've taken with all of my mentors in the past.
Chronic shoulder instability creates a lot of issues. And so could you explain a little bit more clearly what this is and how it impacts those in sports and even daily life activities?
Yeah, I try to break down for my patients when I talk about shoulder instability, and I liken the ball and socket of the shoulder like a golf ball on a tee. In other words, it's a very big ball and it's a very small socket. And in all of us, that makes the shoulder joint the most mobile joint in the body, which is very helpful in a lot of the activities that we do every day. So the body tries to give us a little bit more stability in the shoulder, because having a big ball and a small socket in all of us, that's the most unstable joint in the body because it's the most mobile joint in the body. So the body creates this labrum, which is a cartilage ring around the socket that in a sense increases the size of the golf tee. And that helps to prevent the ball from rolling off. So when you injure your shoulder or you dislocate your shoulder, the ball hits against the socket or the golf ball hits against the tee and it can knock a part of the tee off. And we all know if we put a golf ball on part of a golf tee, we may be able to get it to sit just right. But without as much golf tee, that ball is easily able to fall off. And that's what instability is. That's what chronic instability is. And that can affect you in everyday life when you're playing basketball, football, or throwing a ball. But if you have very little golf tee, then shoulder instability or chronic instability can happen. Even I've had patients that even dislocate their shoulder when they sleep, because the muscles that surround the shoulder, they may help to keep it in place. When you sleep, you relax, your muscles relax, and there's nothing holding the ball in the socket. And so that's the idea of what instability is.
Okay. I just saw a video this morning of a basketball player, college basketball player, went up for a rebound, and he subluxed his shoulder. He grabbed his shoulder, was running down the court, and you could actually see it kind of slide back in. So what for our audience is a little difference between the subluxation and the dislocation?
Subluxations are if that ball is about to slide off of the golf ball is about to fall off the golf tee, but doesn't quite fall off all the way. So the shoulder kind of almost pops out of place, but it doesn't get all the way over. Whereas in a true dislocation, the ball will completely come out of the socket and will get stuck and will need to be put back into a place by a medical professional.
Okay. So here in Florida, we're a year-round active population. Overhead sports such as baseball, tennis, and now pickleball are always in full swing. So any general recommendations as to proper training, throwing, rest, recovery? We'll look more deeply into that in a minute, but just some general recommendations initially.
Yeah, what we've seen in the literature, at least in the orthopedic sports literature, is that, you know, year-round sports or year-round playing is certainly puts players and athletes at an increased risk of injury. So I always counsel my athletes, you need to take the time to A, let your body rest and recover, B, take the time to condition those muscles. Because, you know, if you take a baseball player, for example, that's throwing repetitively over and over and over again, you know, that's a repetitive activation of the muscle. But it doesn't allow the muscle to grow, to hypertrophy, to rest. So I think there is certainly should be a big emphasis on allowing, especially our youth athletes, the time to let their young bodies recover, condition, strengthen, and then get back to playing. Because the reality is a lot of parents and a lot of athletes are afraid to take time off because they think they may not make it to the next level if they don't play this one extra season. But the reality is if you're a good player and you're great at your sport, you're going to excel and you're going to go forward. And I would say that those athletes that take the time to rest, recover, and heal their bodies are the ones that at the next level are going to avoid those serious injuries that could preclude them from continuing to play.
Okay. So we see it with a throwing athlete. It's very important that we address the entire kinetic chain. And that's a big word for really addressing things from the toenails to the fingertips. And when trying to prevent or addressing shoulder pain or instability. So why is it important to address not just the throwing arm, but the whole body? What's important about that?
That's a great question. And I try to tell my young athletes, pitchers and overhand throwers all the time to focus on the fundamental of the actual throwing motion and don't worry about the power at first. Because when you're 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, you don't have the strength that you're going to have when you get into your teens and your 20s. And I always try to bring up the point that pitchers don't stand on a pitching mound statically stable, just throwing the ball with their arm. And I ask athletes, what do they do? And the athletes will always respond, they go through a windup. And then we talk about what is the windup. The windup is how you build energy from what you said, from the floor, from the ground up. And so a lot of the power, and I try to tell them, a lot of the power in their throwing motion is going to come from their legs, from their core, from their upper back, whereas the shoulder and the elbow are there basically just for accuracy. So I always try to counsel them that, you know, people always say they hate leg day, but leg day could probably be one of the most important days for a throwing athlete because that's where a lot of their power is coming from.
If your, let's just say, older colleagues tell me that a lot of athletes just want to work on their mirror muscles. And you say, what are the mirror muscles? They want those big sculptured chest and biceps and the like, but it's more important than that. So what are some of your recommendations? And I think you just really covered that for strengthening the shoulder as well as a preventative measure. But if we definitely need to work on from the bottom up. But do you have a recommendation, particularly just for the shoulder? We're talking about working on those posterior shoulder muscles in the back, the scapula and things like that. So what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, you know, that's a lot of athletes will spend time on the bench press and the overhead press, but the smaller muscle groups, specifically the rotator cuff, is probably the most important muscle group for a throwing athlete. And there are specific ways that athletes can work on those smaller muscles. There's something called the Thrower's 10, which is a series of exercises that Dr. Job helped to pioneer, where a lot of baseball players, and you see them out there working on bands. It doesn't take, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pounds to strengthen those smaller muscle groups. But I would argue that those smaller muscle groups are probably more important in terms of injury prevention, as opposed to the pec and the delt and the trap and those beach muscles that patients always like to have, or young athletes always like to have. So yeah, working on those smaller muscle groups is something they should be doing throughout the year and postseason.
So I've got a quote for you. This is from, this will date me, from General George McNamara. He said, when you can't measure what is important, you tend to make important what you can measure. And I say that in reference to the many who place a very high value in throwing velocity these days and may miss the value of a proper strengthening of the entire kinetic chain, misguided weight ball programs that we're seeing now, and just failure to follow the research. Failure to listen to pitch counts, as well as the improper rest or recovery. So what are your thoughts to really promote safe participation to avoid injury?
Yeah, this goes kind of back to what we were discussing earlier, that there is a need to try to counsel athletes to take time off, play a different sport, give your body rest. Working the same muscle group over and over again without rehabbing without doing the proper conditioning is certainly a setup for injury. And Dr. Andrews put a study out that showed that athletes who participate in one sport for more than 8 months in a year are at three times higher risk of having an injury requiring surgery. And that's a pretty staggering stat. So, pitch counts. And, you know, we see our athletes playing in rec leagues, playing travel ball, playing high school ball. And I think it's important, and it's a call to arms to the parents who need to keep an eye on how many pitches maybe a pitcher's throwing, because the coach in the rec league may not know how many times the player's pitching in the travel ball league. Whereas the parents are going to know, my son pitched in this game, and then he played in this game and the next game. So, you know, I think there's a lot of components to, number one, giving athletes rest and making sure that we're taking care of our young athletes and trying to prevent them from having injuries.
Okay, let's take a quick break. This year, JSMP celebrates 40 years in sports safety in the Jacksonville, Duval, and Northeast Florida region. Its scope is spread both statewide and nationally, making Florida one of the safest in policy and best practice measures that promote safe sports. Each year, it hosts a clinical symposium, and this year, Dr. Kaplan will be there Saturday from 9 to 3:30 p.m., April the 6th, at Everbank Stadium. He'll be doing a breakout session. There'll be some didactic programs as well. So let's hear from one of our presenters.
Hi, this is Dr. Asif Ali. I'm a clinical assistant professor at UT Medical School in Houston, Texas, in the Texas Medical Center, and a member with the American Heart Association. Please join me on Saturday, April 6th at the JSMP Clinical Symposium at Everbank Stadium in Jacksonville, Florida, where we'll be discussing about sudden cardiac arrest screening, stats, and where we're on consensus. Look forward to seeing you there.
We will also celebrate our 40 years with our third annual gala on Tuesday, June 4th at the River City Rail Yard. For more information, see our website at jaxsmp.com. The Jacksonville Sports Medicine Program is also the managing partner of the Florida Alliance of Sports Medicine, or FASMED, which is a statewide coalition of sports medicine physicians who are engaged in promoting the highest level of high school sports safety through education, awareness, and access to medical resources to keep kids safe. So welcome back to the U Sports Safety Update. We're speaking today with Dr. Kevin Kaplan of the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, and who also serves as head team physician of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So let's switch gears to football here a little bit. It's a full contact collision sport. So what are you seeing on and off the field related to the shoulder? Any concerns in training, especially for our younger athletes that you're seeing? Because we're seeing more labral tears, I think, or you may be. But what are you seeing as far as football-related injuries?
In terms of the shoulder, position-dependent injuries are quite obvious in terms of, you know, offensive linemen, I'll see a lot of posterior labral tears. They're blocking with their arm straight ahead, so their arm will get pushed back, and the posterior or labrum in the back is most commonly injured. Whereas in my skilled positions like defensive backs and wide receivers, I will see more anterior labral injuries. And so a lot of instability type episodes. And, you know, a lot of these injuries throughout the year, we can treat conservatively as long as they're not having repetitive dislocation. So we'll let them play through the year. And routinely at the end of the year, I'll do three or four labral surgeries on NFL athletes. I certainly see quite a few AC joint injuries. So the joint between the collarbone and the shoulder blade is called the AC joint. And that injury typically occurs when you land on your shoulder and you can injure that joint. And those are by and large treated conservatively as well. Anti-inflammatory medications, sometimes we'll do injections on those, and rarely do we have to do surgery. So, you know, a lot of these injuries, you know, fortunately, you can't stop because this is a collision sport, but you can train the muscle groups that we talked about, the bigger ones in this case and the smaller ones, to try to prevent these types of injuries. And certainly technique can help to avoid some of these injuries. But with any collision sport, there's sometimes that you just can't make a decision that you're not going to get hit or you're not going to land a certain way and you've got to reach for a ball. So a lot of these injuries, unfortunately, are inevitable.
All right. We've seen a lot of innovation over the years, new protective devices, especially for the shoulder to help limit that motion at times, and then also to protect the AC joint. So, and it, when you look at the videos of athletes, maybe even back in the 90s and 2000s, the size of the shoulder pads, and then now they look like they're just barely covering the shoulder. So what kind of innovations have you seen in protective equipment and just a modification of protection for shoulder injuries?
So a lot of the braces that we use during the season, something called a Sully brace, a Simply Stable brace was one that attached to the shoulder pads. The Simply Stable brace is one that it goes closer to the skin and is a way with straps to try to keep the ball from popping out of the socket. Is it 100% guaranteed? No, because we're not right next to the shoulder joint and you still may have a labral tear or a cartilage tear. The other things the equipment managers can do in regards to AC joints, they can channel the pads so that the pads don't push on that area and don't hit that AC joint. There are other types of braces that are out there, and the idea is to try to prevent that either dislocation again or landing awkwardly on the AC joint. They're not 100% foolproof, but I think we're getting better at trying to modify the equipment. The equipment's getting more specialized per position group. I think that's going to help us, but we're still probably going to see a lot of these injuries going forward.
Okay, thank you. Many parents want to see their child to be the next superstar, whether Steph Curry, Caitlin Clark, or Shohei Ohtani. But how do you see that they can manage this without beginning a lot of sports specialization? You touched on this in the beginning, but we're seeing a lot of sports specialization. So what do you recommend? I think you recommended, obviously, that they take some time off, but there's risk and rewards in this. Are you seeing increased injuries with those kids that are in sports specialization?
I think we are. And I think if you follow the literature, it will suggest that athletes that are highly specialized at a young age are at risk for three things. One is the risk for injury that you just pointed out. You know, I think these athletes are playing year-round. They're playing in multiple leagues, multiple teams, and the risk for injury is much higher in that population as opposed to you playing other sports when they're young. I think there is a psychological risk in having these highly specialized athletes that you have to play baseball, and really pushing them in one sport. I think there's a psychological stress that we may be putting on these athletes instead of playing baseball and then going to play basketball and then going to play soccer. That gives their brain a little bit of a rest as well. We got to remember these young kids, the young athletes and the young kids that we're seeing, their brains are not developed yet. And so we don't want to overstress them by making them think they have to play this one sport and that's all they can play. Because again, the reality is if they're good enough to play a sport, one sport going forward, they're going to get there. It's not going to be a matter of whether or not they played 8 seasons in a row versus 4 seasons and played other sports. And then the last risk I think we're seeing is a risk of burnout. A lot of these kids that play these specialized sports year round from the time they're 10 on are at a much higher increased risk of burnout.
Glad you mentioned burnout, because I was going to say that, as well as those mental health issues that come from just overstress, overactivity sometimes. So can't get by without this. March is National Athletic Training Month, and we want to give a shout out to your colleague, Jeff Ferguson of the Jaguars. He was just recognized by his peers as for his outstanding work in the NFL. But would you speak to the value of having a certified athletic trainer in any school program, especially in the secondary, as well as these professional sports and really at any sporting events? What's their value to you and to parents and athletes out there?
I mean, they're invaluable, right? We can't do our jobs as orthopedic surgeons without our athletic trainers. Athletic trainers are valuable to physicians. They're valuable to parents, and they're certainly valuable to the athletes. And Jackson Sports Medicine Program has done an unbelievable job in getting our athletic trainers to a lot of our public schools. And it should be mandatory. There shouldn't be a time when an athletic trainer isn't at a high school or middle school or a place where athletes are playing collision sports or any sports in general. you know, from the most minor ankle sprain to a Damar Hamlin situation where you need an athletic trainer there saving someone's life. I think it can't be stated enough how important and crucial our athletic trainers are to our young athletes, to our collegiate athletes, and to our professional athletes.
All right. As we close out now, any takeaways or real call to actions regarding shoulder injuries that parents need to be aware of? Maybe just two or three.
I think, stressing the importance of preseason training, taking care of the shoulder during the season, ice, stretching, rest, and then postseason, making sure to do a strengthening type program that's age specific, obviously, but working on those muscle groups so they can prepare for the next season. And in the time where you have an injury or if your athlete is complaining of something, remember these athletes are also young and they have growth plates. That may be something we didn't discuss, but if an athlete is continuing to complain of shoulder pain, see an athletic trainer, come see one of our orthopedic surgeons so that we can take a look and make sure that you're safe to continue playing.
Right. Something that may seem small at the time can turn into something very big. So get it taken care of and looked at very early. So thank you very much, Dr. Kaplan, for joining us today, and wish you the very best in your practice and go Jags, as you say. We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Youth Sports Safety Update. JSMP's mission is dedicated to youth sports safety through awareness, advocacy, and injury prevention. Please feel free to write a review on Apple or Spotify. For more information and access to important resources on youth sports safety, visit our website at jaxsmp.com, and you'll see some things in our show notes as well. Guests of the show are stakeholders of youth sports safety. Views and conclusions expressed in the program are those of the guest and not necessarily those of the employees, administration, or associated staff of JSMP. It does not imply endorsement of any product, service, or opinion discussed. All materials presented in this program is provided for information only and should not be construed as professional advice. Any use of this podcast without the express written consent of the JSMP or FASMED is strictly prohibited. The Youth Sports Safety Update is a production of the Jacksonville Sports Medicine Program. Your host and producer today is Jim Mackey. Thank you very much for joining us, and please stay safe.